welcome to another edition of A Public Affair. Today we have in studio with us the wonderful Karen Roberts Grissom. How are you, dear?
I'm great on this lovely sunny Colorado day. How are you? Oh,
thank God. We got past that horrible snow.
That's right.
I thought it was apocalypse outside that.
And we're so spoiled here. We're not used to that.
Really. We are very spoiled. Well, we're glad to have you in studio here, fresh off of your Women's March speech.
Yes.
That you performed in front of 150,000 people. How was that?
It was amazing.
Oh, I can only imagine. And, you know, the reason why we have you in studio today was not because just of the Women's March, you know, speech you gave, but also to introduce the community to you as a person, artist, and advocate. So, ladies and gentlemen, this morning, what we're going to be talking about is Karen's history in activism as an artist, speaker, organizer. This is just a very talented woman that I think that a lot of people don't know enough about. So please sit back and enjoy the next half hour with us. And we're going to talk about all things Ms. Karen Roberts Grissom. So Karen, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get involved in advocacy and becoming a speaker and an artist?
Well, it's interesting. I am originally from Cleveland, Ohio, and we came out here very young. And I learned at a young age how progressive Colorado actually is for what matters. There are people, I remember we used to say things like, oh, I can't wait until Denver grows up. But it was grown enough when it came to the things that matter. And one of the things that matters here is the arts. And in 2003, I started a spoken word poetry venue called the Speak Out. And when you hear some of the subject matter that comes across a mic like that, that's when you become an advocate. It just naturally happens because you cannot ignore the topics. You cannot ignore the performances, just the bravery of some of the people who get up and address some of the issues that they do.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, being a woman of color, yes. And being an advocate and a spoken word artist and promoting free form artistry and the ethos of poetry, the written word and the spoken word, what is some of the more popular topics that have come across your ethos in your arena of women and men that are speaking out in the community for people of color?
It's interesting because I noticed that over time we had more artists addressing LGBT issues. We had more artists addressing issues like health and sexual assault and things that they had survived and just overcome. And, you know, of course, there's always comedy. You know, there's always the fun stuff. There's always the brilliance of the beauty of watching someone perform. But I remember, you know, one poet getting up and just expressing how his sister passed from AIDS. And it was like, wait a minute, that was the first time we'd had that on the mic. So there's always something. And I always tell the audience that these artists get up and they pour their heart out. And these are the issues that affect everyone. But it's the artists who get up and use this pulpit, this microphone. It is their lifeline for many of us. So that's how it got started. And that's what comes across. Anything that affects the everyday average person and some is what comes over the mics here in Denver. And these poets are nationally known. They are champions nationally and globally.
That is phenomenal. Now, these nationally and internationally known poets and speakers and artists, it sounds like they have a lot of what a lot of people have in common that don't take the stage in that forum. They have some type of obstacle or domestic issue, psychological, cognitive issue that they are trying to overcome, basically either from their past, their present, or things that they feel they may have to tackle in their future.
Right.
Now, the driving force behind your advocacy of artistry for people to have that pulpit and speak from their heart, it feels to me, and I've seen this in person, that people are able to unburden themselves and unload what ails them or whatever shame they can just peel off. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is accurate. You're pretty good. It's very accurate. One of the things that we always said is that it's your opportunity to just be. Like, I'm not trying to make anybody be anything other than who they are. And so the goal is to just be whatever it is and let that come over them. And we've grown. We've grown together as a community. And so it was at the mic that I even first publicly talked about my history of sexual abuse and rape. It first came out on the mic. I had a whole year of cleansing, you know, and it was my year, and I grew from that. That's when I really became not just a survivor, but an overcomer. And I had already revealed it to my mother before she passed. But, you know, being able to unburden yourself from guilt and shame, because, honey, I'm telling you, this is something that no child is responsible for, yet you grow to an adult carrying that burden. And if you know me, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to let it happen. I'm not letting anybody carry anybody else's mess, period. We are not carrying anybody's secrets. And to be honest, that's what this whole Me Too and Time's Up and all this, I said it years ago when I told my mama, and I made sure that my nieces and nephews knew about it because I wasn't holding anybody's secrets anymore. And I refuse to, and I don't think anybody else should, because it can destroy you. It can hold you back from so many awesome things.
And that is so true. And I'm a true believer that you're only as sick as your darkest secret. The necessity of this conversation today and having you in studio with us is to talk about the advocacy of abuse, the advocacy of sexual assault, sexual harassment, molestation. And I know that is a sensitive topic for a lot of people to talk about because there's an invisible weight of shame that goes with that.
That's right.
And as the illustrious and great and iconic Oprah just said, you know, time is up.
That's right.
Time is up. And what I feel is so wonderful about you is that you still have vulnerability about the situation, but it's not consuming you.
No.
It's not consuming you. Now, based on your background and your fearlessness in wanting to overcome and help other people, why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the organized movements and some of the programs that you participated in? I know most recently you were one of the lead organizers or was the lead organizer of the Women's March or the March on for Black Women here in Denver. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. So I got a phone call from an awesome friend of mine by the name of Kenyatta Fulton, and she wanted to get some ladies together to do the March for Black Women. I didn't know everybody who was involved. I knew Kenyatta. I knew Chantel. I didn't know Tia Trent. And we, as a foursome, got together, and it was done in a very short amount of time. And we just wanted people who were going to speak to the issues that pertain to exclusively to Black women. Now, and I want to clarify, I don't mean they're exclusive to Black women, but the consequences of some of the things that we experience as Black women are different, and the consequences are exclusive to us in that we don't always have the resources. We don't always have the information. And so it affects us differently. For instance, I know of an example of a young woman, and part of this event was based in D.C., just like the recent Women's March. So it too was based in D.C. and spanned through different states. Well, with that, there were certain topics we needed to address. Of course, there's always the sexual assault issues, but also issues like women who go missing, black women go missing, and young girls, and there's no follow-up. We all know who Natalie Holloway is, but yet Denver has our own Lashaya Stein, who's been missing for over a year now. And I don't see any continuing stories in the news for that. They're still talking about the baby that, you know, went missing, and then they found her body in Boulder 20, 30 years later, but nobody's talking about Lashaya Stein and now Barbara Randon, who's missing here. You know, this needs to be, these issues need it to come up. And that was the significance and the purpose for the March for Black Women. It's like, yes, we have similar things, but the consequences for us are different. And real quick, I'll share with you, I was the coordinator for a Denver Human Services satellite office. We had clients working with us. And I remember one day, one who was working for me, she came in and she said, I was raped this weekend. Now, mind you, yes, that was powerful, but at the same time, she came to work. This is a woman who said, I still got mouths to feed. So even though this traumatic thing happened, I still have mouths to feed. And so she had no choice but to fix her face, soldier on, and come in and do what she had to do because she had mouths to feed. And that's the difference between us and those who have an uncle or somebody who has a practice and we can just go see them or whatever.
Or those who have private medical insurance.
Right.
They can afford to take PTO.
Yes.
Take medical leave.
Yes.
Psychological leave.
Yes.
And that is something we're going to continue to discuss on the other side of our pause for station identification. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the wonderful Karen Roberts Grissom, a local activist, artist, and just all around wonderful speaker and phenomenal human being. We are discussing today issues with the communities of color, particularly Black women and also Latino women and marginalized women who are going under the radar dealing with everyday issues such as sexual assault, rape, incest, poverty, not getting the type of medical treatment they need, not getting the type of job training they need or education they need to protect themselves and what to do when they incur some of these horrible and horrific and inevitable realities in life. You are listening to KGNU Community Radio Public Affairs. I am your host, Tish Buford, and we're going to go ahead and continue our conversation now with Karen Roberts Grissom. So let's go ahead and pick up where we left off here. So what I have found is that the majority of the reason why a lot of these wonderful women of color have the unintended consequences of dealing with the shortcomings of getting follow-up care and being able to get the assistance from their community is lack of social and economic status. Is that accurate?
Right. That is so accurate.
All right. Can you speak to that for us?
Yes. In fact, the interesting thing is there was an article recently that I'm sure you've seen that identifies Black women as the most educated population when it comes to the disenfranchised. Out of that group, they're the most educated. And that's awesome. But, you know, on the same plane, when we still have a lot of women who are in the situation where they don't have the amount of education that others have, or maybe they do. I've seen articles about sisters with PhDs that have been homeless, that have been unable to find employment. This is a problem. And so the PhD or the master's degree doesn't guarantee it, but it sure does help rather than having somebody like the sister I told you about who didn't have anything. And so we have to support. We have to come together. I mean, it's really time. And time's up for a lot of things, to be honest. Time is up for us beating up on each other, bashing each other. Time is up for us as women doing these little, like, I don't do petty and messy because my time is too valuable. I just don't have time for it. You know, I got meals to cook. I got business. I need to have coffee with you. So I don't have time to be petty and messy.
I promise we'll get that coffee in.
Yes.
It's a priority for me. Now, going back to the lady that was assaulted.
Yes.
How is she doing now? Have you kept in contact with her? Has she been able to file a police report and get some legs under the investigation to the person that assaulted her?
I don't believe she ever filed a police report. We stayed in touch. The office stayed open for 5 years, but it was closed for budget issues. We went into one of these budgetary, you know how it is with government. And our office was shut down, which I hated because it was right there in the community for everybody who lived in Park Hill. And we stayed in touch for, after she left, about 6 months. And I don't believe she ever filed a report because at that time, these victims, just like we see people coming out now, people weren't wanting to expose themselves like that. And oftentimes we as women, when something like that happens, you bear the chance, the risk of someone saying, well, what were you wearing? Because she was out. She was out. Mm-hmm. And so it's, what were you wearing? What were you doing? Why were you out that late? You know, and just questions that really don't matter. Because as far as I'm concerned, you should be able to walk butt naked on 16th Street Mall and not have anybody touch you. You know, that's all right.
Absolutely. And there's always the subtext of, okay, was she inviting that? There is no place for anyone to be violated.
That's right.
Whether it's the workplace, on a street corner. People, and this goes for men and women as well.
That's right.
That you should be able to walk in your own space and not be violated.
That's
mentally,
right.
Emotionally, or physically.
That's right.
So with all of the advocacy work that you have done in the past, what are you working on now in addition to the March on for Black Women in Denver to help ladies and other citizens of Colorado like the one we've been talking about for the last few minutes?
Well, there are some things in the works right now that I cannot mention because they're in the preliminary stages. One of the things that I do that is ongoing is I just do one-on-ones, Tish. I do a lot of those. My weekends are full of me doing one-on-ones with survivors, ladies who just hit me up anonymously and are like, I need somebody to talk to because I've never revealed this. I've never shared this with anybody. Or, you know, for instance, like me, I told somebody when this first happened to me. Well, not when it first happened. Well, yes. When it first happened, I told a family member and her response was basically, don't ever lie to me like that again. That's a quote. And people have experienced this. So my job now is I spend a lot of time doing one-on-ones. I also have had groups where we've met, where women were more open to talking about it in that format, an open forum discussion. Like I am very careful with not putting it out there in a way that people who don't want to be exposed or don't want that exposed, they want to unburden themselves, but they don't want to make it so obvious.
Well, yeah, and they do deserve a sense of privacy and autonomy because,
yes,
unfortunately, there's still a stigma.
That's right.
With revealing such a very personal issue.
That's right.
And you need refuge to unpack that and to assimilate that and get the help you need. Now, how many women do you usually counsel within a week or a month period usually?
You know, within a month, because I do it random and at random places. So I usually do, because of my current schedule, I can do more, probably 3 a week. Maybe some of the same women even. And some of them are very young and have had experiences as young as 3 and 4 years old. Some of them were older. And so because of that, you know, and I'm just open. I openly talk about mine because I don't care what anybody thinks at this point in my life. I'm too old to be worrying about that. Not that I'll ever say that I'm old, but
no, fabulous.
Yeah,
never
that's
old.
It.
Never old, but fabulous.
But I don't have time for that. Like, my, again, I don't do petty and messy, and I don't do things that waste my time, because I would much rather spend my time being a source for other people and letting them have an opportunity to share. And it's a vault. I don't share with anyone anybody's information, because, you know, I was lucky enough to have somebody who helped me through my process. And so this is my paying it forward.
Absolutely. And you know what? What you're given is such a invaluable gift. You can't put a monetary value on it. You can't put any value but time. And this is spiritual currency being moved forward and paid forward. And what I have seen as a result of women who suffer from a traumatic situation such as this, they turn to drugs.
That's right.
They turn to promiscuity.
That's right.
Their education suffers. Their personal life suffers. And their self-esteem suffers. And if they don't have the self-esteem and the confidence to pay attention to their body, their mind, their spirit, and their education, they will usually fall into a silo that is almost detrimental to their life and impossible to get out of.
That's right.
So how do you keep these women from being stuck in that emotional silo and helping them, give them the emotional spirit and comfort and motivation to move forward and get the help and counseling they need beyond what you're providing?
It's a matter of time. So what I give more than anything is my time. And my family knows that this is, it's what I do. And what's interesting is when I first started speaking about this, it wasn't just women who were coming forward. I remember doing a piece on stage, and there was a man who, I walked off stage, and he looked at me and he said, "How do you get past it? I don't know how to get past this." And you know, unfortunately, I wasn't able to keep in touch with him. But this is something that we, and I'm proud of Brother Terry Crews for being like, "Hey, you know, this man approached me wrong." So I find that when people find their voice or find an outlet or someone that they can say, "This happened and I don't feel good about it. I've been carrying this mess for 5 years or 10 years or 20 years. I've been carrying it and I need to unburden myself so that I can live." What happens is it gives people the ability to live again, to breathe freely and to regain their sense of self.
Absolutely. And it gives them the space to heal. And
that's
be reborn.
Right. That's right.
Now, before you leave us today, I got to brag on you a little bit, because I was going over some of your philanthropic history here. So you were talking about the Speak Out,
yes,
which is kind of like your big baby, mm-hmm. And which you started back in 2003,
yes,
which is phenomenal. And then you were working on Art Mecca,
yes,
live in 2013. Now, and that is still in line with the arts, but also blending in people, being able to provide them the platform to speak their truth.
Speak their truth, and Art Mecca Live was really an opportunity to bring men and women together so that we could have dialogue about relationships and families and all of the things that people have opinions about. That's what Art Mecca Live, it was food, it was men and women talking about relationships, and it was awesome. And it was very healing, because we got to hear them and they got to hear us.
Oh, that's fantastic. And just a couple other we're going to mention real quick. Mm-hmm. The L3 Summit Black Fist Rally, mm-hmm. and the House of Music for Black History Month, which I heard about a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. So these are some of the other programs and I should say events that you've led or participated in.
Yes. House of Music is my good friends, the Fashaws. They have House of Music, House of Poetry. Jean and Kenya are awesome people. And they are, and she's probably one of the most talented people I've ever met in my life. I had the honor of sharing a stage with her in a play, and I was like, "Oh my God, I feel like I'm with, you know, Alfre Woodard or, you know, Angela Bassett or somebody." And so I hosted the Black History events that House of Music had going at the time. And it was awesome. And so I do a lot of hosting throughout the state for different events. And it's my honor, my pleasure to just get behind a mic. I think, like I said at the rally, I was born with a microphone, a megaphone in my throat. It's what I do. And I love it. And I thank you for this opportunity.
Oh, you are absolutely welcome. And before we go today, if people need to reach out to you or want to get in contact with you to either schedule an event or maybe perhaps get some one-on-one counseling, how could they reach you?
Well, they can reach me on Facebook at Karen Roberts Grissom, G-R-I-S-S-O-M like Mary. And my email is Kat, K-A-T, at thespeakout.com.
Well, Karen, thank you so much for being in studio with us today. It's been an absolute honor and pleasure. And thank you all for listening to KGNU, a public affair community radio. I've been your host, Tish Buford, and thank you for listening. And you all have a great day. And please remember, stay educated, stay engaged, and always stay ready. Thank you for listening.